I'm John Krall. Indianapolis Public Safety Director Frank Straub leaves his post soon, bringing to a close an embattled chapter in the history of the city's law enforcement community. Today on No Limits, we will talk about where Indianapolis has been in regard to public safety, where it is now, and where it should go. We will discuss all of this with our guests, Ryan Vaughn, Chief of Staff for Mayor Greg Ballard, the Reverend Charles Ellis, who is the Executive Director of the 10-Point Coalition, and Bill Owensby, who is President of the Indianapolis Fraternal Order of Police Lodge No. 86. Please join the conversation by calling 1-866-476-3881, emailing nolimits@wfyi.org, or sending a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Now, the day's news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the changes ahead in public safety here in Indianapolis, and I am fortunate to have as guests Ryan Vaughn, who is the chief of staff for Mayor Greg Ballard. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Thanks for the invitation, John.
It's good to have you here. The Reverend Charles Ellis, who is the executive director of the 10-Point Coalition. Reverend Ellis, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good to be here.
And Bill Owensby, who is the president of Indianapolis FOP Lodge No. 86. Bill, welcome to the program.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
It's good to have you here. I want to start with sort of an overarching question. Let's take a read on right now where we are in terms of, it's been a tumultuous period, obviously, for law enforcement and, the relationship between law enforcement officials and the community. Take a read on where things are right now and what our perceptions are. I'll start with Ryan Vaughn.
Well, thanks, John. I guess the obvious point to start is that we're in a bit of a transition period. Public Safety Director Frank Straub has submitted his resignation late spring, and a committee has been formed to accept resumes for folks entertaining accepting that position or applying for that position. We've established a committee that consists of trusted advisors of the mayor, members of the community, and public safety experts. Reverend Ellis's predecessor, Reverend Harrison, serves on that committee. We have an interim police chief, Rick Height. Interim may not be the right word. He is pursuing his law enforcement credentials here in Indiana after serving as a police officer in Baltimore for 32 years and recently assumed that position. And we're heading into a difficult budget season where we're going to have to make some difficult decisions about how we spend our money in this city and what money we have to spend. So certainly we're at a point of transition and reflection. It's a good time for us to take a step back and have the community conversation about our priorities, about our focus, and about our strategies.
Reverend Ellis, I'd like to move to you next and also ask you to weave into your answer probably a brief description of what the 10-Point Coalition is, just for the uninitiated out there.
Okay, thank you. Well, sure. I guess I'll start with that first. 10-Point Coalition, by and large, our mission is to help reduce violence in the city of Indianapolis. And one of the main ways we do this is by engaging those in the community, those that are involved in risky behavior, what we would say high risk. And we do this through direct engagement, talking to gangbangers, drug dealers, et cetera. A lot of members of our staff are actually ex-gang members and so they do possess unique characteristics in order to reach and talk to this community and say, hey, I used to be where you are. You don't have to, go down that road. Mm-hmm. So we work with the police, actually, in the sense that they tell us where hot spot areas are, and oftentimes when there's a homicide where the crowd is gathered and people are unruly unrest, a lot of times we, as the being a community-based organization, mm-hmm. we can speak to the crowd in a way and be more of a buffer that the police cannot. And one of the high profile events we do, we just completed, again, successful Indiana Black Expo, that same kind of principle, that same kind of model. So, that's what we do, in a nutshell. We do some other things, but it's all about the reduction of violence. And I would say, as we are in a transition period, as Ryan has stated, that I think, we made some strides in public safety,
with respect to
the violence and the homicide rate. Mm-hmm. It's interesting, even last year where we had a few high-profile violent killings, and what I mean is several people were shot, mm-hmm. several people were killed, but overall, the overall rate was actually down. Mm-hmm. And I think, I think we're making some headway, we're making some strides. It's not where we want it to be, where we like it to be, but I think we're making some headway. I think on the front of officer and community relations, we're also making headway. So I see some positive signs, some positive things that we are doing. Sometimes because of exposure, or people tend to gravitate toward some key events, their perception may get skewed. But I think we are moving in the right direction, and we've done some good things here in the city of Indianapolis.
And I'm going to let Bill Owensby sort of close this part of it out with the sort of baseline question of where we are. I know FOP at times has been critical of the way law enforcement has been administered in this city. Where are we right now?
Well, if we're not at a tipping point in terms of staffing levels and police coverage, we soon will be. I think it's no secret in the last few days there's been a published report that we are now at 1,599 officers and we're about 100 short of our authorized strength. Realistically, though, we're probably several hundred short of where we should be manpower-wise. There's study after study done on the ratio of the population versus police officers to cover mm-hmm. that population, and where we've always been really woefully short. We've always done a really magnificent job of making that up, but we're and Ryan hit the nail on the head. They're really the underlying theme of this whole thing is going to be the budget. We realize that we are having budgetary issues. The city is, the mm-hmm. state is, the country is. So mm-hmm.
the world is
exactly yeah. so. You know, while we want, as a labor organization, our officers to be safe and have mm-hmm. adequate numbers, the citizens should be expecting that also. But, you know, the adage of we have to do more with less mm-hmm. rings true to a certain extent. But we're, like I said, soon reaching a tipping point where we're going to be doing less with less. So public safety for the next several years is going to be in a really, really precarious position.
We are talking about issues confronting public safety here in Indianapolis. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Al, welcome to the program.
Hi.
Thanks
for taking my call.
Certainly. Your question.
Yes, I'm. I understand the budgetary concerns, and I think every city in America is probably facing the same concerns. I'm just wondering what would be the overall strategy with regard to a couple of things. The juvenile gang violence seems to be growing and growing northward in our communities, and what would be the plans with regard to expanding corporate partnership between the municipality and other funding sources that would have interest in reducing violence? Especially with regard to business sectors. And so it would seem as though in a time of fiscal tightening of the belt would be a time to expand corporate partnerships with the municipality, and then also to focus any additional revenues that came in, i.e. Super Bowl, those kind of things, to reducing violence, which would again make the city more attractive to as a venue for bringing new folks in as tourists for the future of the business community as well.
Thank you. Thanks for the question. We'll take it up, Al. Well, I'll start with the Reverend Ellis on this, Reverend Charles Ellis. What since you'd spoken earlier, obviously, about dealing with the gang issue, what is the strategy, really, for dealing with what he calls the creep of the gangs northward?
Yeah, we're really, I think actually some of the things that he's already talked about is already being looked at and implemented in the sense of trying to get partnerships with respect to businesses to be involved, to understand that we have to understand that it's all our community and all of us have to play a role. And so I think the whole concept, one of the later concepts or newer concepts, and Bill could speak to this, it's a community policing. And community policing, under the community policing, my organization kind of operates in, if you will, that model. And of course, you need resources. And so you need to attract funders. You need to attract the business community to say, and everybody has a role to play in this and in our effort to deal with the issue of gang violence. I don't, you know, and it continues. And I think we have to be creative. I think there are new ways and some new ideas about going about attacking this problem. And actually Indianapolis, I would say, is really kind of on the cutting edge in already doing some of these things to help combat this problem.
Ryan Vaughn, I'm going to throw the question to you, obviously, as chief of staff to the mayor. I'm sure you've looked at other cities, other communities that have had success in combating gang problems. Are there places that are doing this well, and what can we learn from them?
Yeah, predictably, Reverend Ellis is remarkably humble, and I'll just take a second to sort of point out that our most effective relationship to date has been marrying the policing effort with the work of the 10-Point Coalition. I can't express to you how important that has been in us making an impact in juvenile gang violence, us helping police and keep safe downtown, improving those community police relationships. I mean, 10-Point Coalition, seldom in the paper, seldom talked about, is has been monumental. And I think what it really does is it serves as a model, not only within Indianapolis, but in other communities. I mean, 10-Point Coalition, the coalition itself exists in other communities around the country. That partnership, that marriage has been very successful in sort of interventionist strategies in juvenile justice.
Well, let me take it back. Are there other communities, though, that have had success that we've emulated, or are we, as the Reverend Ellis, at the cutting edge? I'll stick with Ryan Vaughn for the moment.
Both. You know, there are other communities. I mean, the 10-Point Coalition, I believe, was founded in Boston on a similar principle. They have developed that kind of partnership. But we're also on the cutting edge in the sense that we're so joined at the hip in this process that we communicate. You know, we share radio calls. We respond, you know, when officers are dispatched to respond to these kind of gang violence, they call the 10-Point Coalition to assist in intervening. I mean, it is really a very, very next level approach to that community police interaction and intervention.
And I'd like to talk a little bit about, obviously, part of the transition right now is that we are going to be looking for a new public safety director. I'm going to start with Bill Owensby. What should that person, what skill set should that person have? What should he or she look like? Not physically, but, you know, in terms of leadership styles and all of that, to get done what needs to be done in this city.
Well, you have to start with what the merit ordinance says the requirements are. So they have to have some sort of a public safety background in police and fire. I think that's very, very important, although it's not absolutely necessary in my mind. The public safety director, in actually years past, has been more of an administrator. You really have to rely on the people that you have working for you to do the kind of the layman's work. So it really is imperative that you get a good chief above a public safety director. But the public safety director still is going to have to deal with some of the major issues that come down the road, the PR issues, the complaints and that kind of thing. So you really have to have a public safety director that is open and will have you at the table to be part of the solution and not part of the problem.
And is there, you know, a particular type of person? The other way to approach this is that that police officers don't want to see in that position.
Well, yes. I mean, a dictator comes to mind. I mean, you don't want. I mean, you want someone that's going to. You want inclusion. In other words,
yeah.
Officers, if they're given a chance. I mean, we have some very, very bright, brave officers, and if they're given a chance to come to the table and bring a solution to the table, that's exactly what they're going to do, and that's what they want to do. They want to be part of the fix. It's their community.
We are talking about public safety here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Krall. My guests today are Ryan Vaughn, Chief of Staff for Mayor Greg Ballard, the Reverend Charles Ellis, who is the Executive Director of the 10-Point Coalition, and Bill Owensby, who is President of Indianapolis FOP Lodge number 86. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today about the changes ahead for Indianapolis public safety. My guests are Ryan Vaughn, who is chief of staff for Mayor Greg Ballard, the Reverend Charles Ellis, who is executive director of the 10-Point Coalition, and Bill Owensby, who is president of Indianapolis FOP Lodge number 86. Just before the break, we were talking about what skill sets, basically, the next public safety director should have. I gave Bill Owensby a chance to take a crack at that. I probably ought to give each of you one as well. I think I'll start with the Reverend Ellis.
Okay, well, I would say that the next public safety director, I think, again, I would say that someone that would continue some of the things that we have been doing with respect to, as we spoke of, the community policing, and someone that is on the cutting edge of new ways to approach and deal with issues. Also, I would say that I would hope this person also would continue some of the reforms. I think some of the reforms that particularly in the police department that have come to pass have been positive. So a person would definitely be sensitive to diversity on the respective forces and certainly sensitive to promotion practices and processes. So I think and then at the end of the day, you got to be able to, I think, as Bill, you got to be able to work with people and get your point across. So certainly someone that's able to do that in a manner that brings people to together, that is inclusive. So I would agree.
Ryan Vaughn, who should the next public safety do, not specifically the human being, but what should he or she be able to do.
Yeah, thanks, John. What I think sometimes gets lost in this discussion is that public safety is more than IMPD. Our public safety director is in charge of the Indianapolis Fire Department, Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department, Animal Care and Control, EMS, Professional Standards, Homeland Security. That's a big job. That's a very big job. It's a job that constitutes about 64% of our entire budget. So what we need in a position there is someone who understands how to leverage resources across that union to provide the best level of protection to everyone at every interval, whether it be an animal care and control issue, a fire issue, or a policing issue. It really kind of touches on a comment Bill made earlier about, you know, we're getting to the point where, you know, we need to do more with less, and then we're going to finally arrive at a point where we're going to end up doing less with less. Mm-hmm. What we need is someone who can come in and take our existing resources and modernize it in a way that we can accomplish more effectively with what we have now. That's going to take an individual who understands national best practices. It's going to take an individual who knows how to optimize the skill sets of all the people in these entities. So you're talking 1,600 police officers, 1,300 firefighters, et cetera, et cetera, in such a way that they can work within an existing budget that is, like everyone's, financially constrained to deliver resources. That means someone who understands technology, understands how technology aids deployment, someone who understands officer safety, someone who understands fire safety, someone who understands finance, and someone who understands how important it is that we continue to cultivate and develop relationships with our community partners.
And who is, you alluded to this earlier, but who is doing the searching for this person?
Sure.
Right,
there's
now? Who's on the committee?
There's a search committee established, sort of three groups within the search committee, some advisors the mayor relies on frequently, some public safety experts. We have a former United States attorney, and the number two at the Indiana Department of Homeland Security. On the community side, we have representatives from a variety of community organizations. Again, 10 Point Coalition is represented. Baptist Ministers Alliance is mm-hmm. represented. We have folks from diverse backgrounds, Kippy Singh, an artist, mm-hmm. Folks from the International Center. So it's really sort of a mix of community involvement, technical experts, and trusted advisors.
Why aren't there the members of the council on there?
Well, you know, there have never been members of the council on there. This is an employee okay. of the mayor. He acts at the direction of the mayor. I'm not disrespecting the council. I used to be the president of the council.
Yeah,
so
I'm aware of that. Do you have some ambivalence about that, or is it the...
No, there's... I mean, the council has a process for review. Mm-hmm. When the mayor presents his recommendation for who should be in charge of public safety, it goes through a review process by the council.
Well, and I guess I'll ask Bill Owensby, given the level of interaction, does it make you uncomfortable at all that there aren't any police officers on that search committee?
Well, yes. I mean, initially we asked for a seat at the table, and the response was, well, if we have you at the table, we have to have fire and AFSCME. And then my next point was then have fire and AFSCME. Mm-hmm. We're going to be working for the person, mm-hmm. so to speak. So I would like to be able to vet the applicant's credentials. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen.
Ryan Vaughn, you wanted to step in. Is there a reason why, if the argument is, could there have been a place to put fire and AFSCME at the table as well? Or...
Well, we have two former public safety directors also a part of this committee. Again, this is the mayor's. This is the person the mayor is going to select to be part of this. We didn't want a committee that was too large and unwieldy. To say that they don't have a seat at the table is, they may not have the person they want sitting at the table, but there's certainly experts around the table who understand what it takes to police this city, what it takes to provide fire in this city, what it takes to have community involvement in this city, what it takes to leverage resources across an enterprise to be most effective in this city.
We are talking about changes in Indianapolis public safety here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten an email question from a listener named James, it's more of a comment, who says, I would much rather see my tax dollars go toward police equipment like bulletproof vests or taser batteries than to ineffective programs like the 10 Point that employs felons and sex offenders. I'll let the Reverend Ellis respond to that one first and then see if Bill Owensby wants to add anything there.
Yeah, well, you know, I will just say that the numbers speak for themselves with respect to our partnership with the police, and since we've been able to work alongside, we have been able to affect the homicide rate and particularly retaliatory crimes, some of the things that we do that go unnoticed at funerals when there's potential for gang violence, our people are there. We also are an organization that believes in redemption. And we do have people that have made mistakes but are turning it around. And many of the people that I work with say they want to clean up the community that they helped mess up. So the thing is, one of the things that the last mayor even said, and we've all talked, that we can't jail our way out of this problem. We have to find other ways to reach people, and some of them is to get them before they get started. There are some people, our running joke is, there are some people that just need prison ministry. We understand that, and but you can't lock everybody up. And so we want to weed out those that we can save and get them going on a positive direction. And there are those people that are out there. So, and I would invite James to tag along with us, wanted to see what we actually do. And it maybe his opinions may change.
And we got in a call from another James who did not want to stay on the line, just left the question. that was related to this and said, you know, his question was, are there statistics out there, directed it toward the FOP for reasons that might, that weren't clear to me, saying, are there statistics out there that demonstrate that the 10-point coalition has been effective? Do you, have you seen, and I'll throw it open, I know the caller directed the question toward Bill Owensby, but I'll take it to any one of the three of you.
Well, if I may, yes, I will tell you there may not be statistics, and it may be one of those things that's just at some point it's immeasurable what they do. We've had the FOP has had many very candid conversations with both Reverend Ellis and Reverend Harrison and other members of the 10-point coalition, and I think it began as a feeling out process for them as well as us, and I think both of our eyes were opened in terms of what each organization does, both the 10-point with the FOP and the FOP with the 10-point. And I can tell you, they're the people that you see walking the canal on the weekends. They're the people that you see trying to make downtown safer on Fridays and Saturday nights. It's the 10-point coalition. I mean, it's obviously along with our law enforcement officers, but they show up. And I can tell you, in talking to homicide investigators, they do make an impact, especially as he alluded to, in retaliatory acts of violence when there's a homicide or a shooting. So I can't really speak to whether they've got people in their employ or their organization that have criminal records. They probably do. I think he even admitted that they do. That's fine, but I can tell you that they are making an impact on the citizens of Indianapolis, and in regards to James, I would much rather have some tax dollars for taser batteries and vests, and actually that was an issue 2 months ago. We weren't buying vests, which is required by state law. We weren't buying taser batteries, and in fact taking tasers away from officers when their batteries went dead. That's a very valuable piece of equipment that saves injuries, if not lives. To their credit, the city has responded by ordering that equipment, so we are going to get that. We don't have it yet. It's in the pipeline, but we are going to get ammo and vests and taser batteries that we weren't getting 2 months ago.
Well, and I guess the Reverend Ellis, I'll let you have another word, and then I want to pick up on this whole budget thing, because obviously it sounds, we keep coming back to that, like, you know, the dial returning to the magnetic pole.
I would just cite real quickly, and obviously, as Bill said, it's a partnership. We work in a partnership, so we don't claim to take credit for these all these numbers. But if you go back and you look at the homicide rate, especially since we have been a couple years ago, we had 10 street outreach workers, and homicide rate has consistently been at or below 100. For a city that's almost a million people, that's pretty good. Now, you know, we like it to be one, we like it to be none, but that's pretty good. Likewise, also a couple years ago, when during what they call the trauma months, where homicides usually, when it's hot, the hotter it is, the homicide, we recorded, I believe, a record of 17 homicides, which was unheard of over 20 years, and I believe the Indianapolis 10-point coalition played a role in that. The Far East Side Committee, FEAC, they attributed some of their 25% reduction in their violence because 10-point coalition was directly involved out there at Hart's Landing and 42nd and Post Road. So we have made an impact. We do have the statistics. I think it's very easy to poo-poo, say this won't work. If you go and you look at best practices across the country, these types of programs are being replicated and they're being done. The 10-point in Indianapolis was actually the first spinoff from the Boston model. And so it has been effective. It is effective. Certainly don't want to be in a crossfire to take equipment or vest away from police officers, but it has been effective tools of starting problems before they get started.
Well, in terms of the funding question, how much is spent on the 10-point coalition? Ryan Vaughn?
I don't know annually. I mean, I've come into this position recently, but I know that we've partnered with them to pay, you know, just over minimum wage for some of the services they provide downtown. I don't know what that annualizes to right at the moment, but I do want to sort of talk about James's email because I think it presents a little bit of a sort of a false dichotomy. Certainly, as Bill has articulated, we have a responsibility to our officers to provide them with equipment. That goes without saying. They need ammo, they need vests, they need tasers. But there's more to public safety than just policing. If we're going to provide for a safer community, Reverend Ellis is right. You can't jail your way out of crime. You know, when I was a counselor, I had this conversation with a constituent of mine, Dave Morovich. He's a friend of mine, so he wouldn't care if I share his name with you. But reducing crime in a community requires investing in everything from officers to the community, to improving schools, to improving the quality of life in the neighborhood. You know, St. Petersburg is a good example. You know, there's a book out there called The Seamless City, written by a former mayor there who's actually from Speedway or spent some time of his life in Speedway, where they invested in some of these crime-ridden or crime-intense areas in the city to really lift the community up on all aspects, and it dramatically reduced the crime rate by 27% over 3 years on all levels, not just homicides. But so you can't take sort of a one-shot approach to policing. It has to be a concerted community effort that touches all facets of what we do.
And, you know, in terms of this, we've talked about the difficulty of budget choices that are coming up here. We talk a little bit about what those choices are going to be and, you know, how will the budget look differently? I'll stick with you, Ryan Vaughn, as the chief of staff of the mayor. What are we looking at going forward?
Sure. Well, every year that that I pass the budget on the council, so the first 4 years of the mayor's term, and then heading into this year, we've had less revenue to deal with. And for those first 4 years, every department outside of public safety took a mandatory 5% reduction on their base. Last year, public safety took a 0.07%, so they operated at pretty much 100% of where they had been in the past. We're just not in a position to do that going into this year. We have cut to the bone everywhere in city government, and no one is going to be immune from the financial state of the city, of all cities, really, in the state of Indiana. It's going to be very challenging. We're going to have to make some very difficult decisions as we move forward here. You know, revenues, just to put this in perspective, the last year of Mayor Peterson's term, he enacted a income tax increase that raised about $94 million that was going to go to public safety. All of that revenue, based on the percentage, is evaporated in this down-income economy. So we're back to revenue levels that were existent in the middle of the Peterson administration, if not worse. And we have not yet risen out of the trickling recovery economy.
And I'm going to take it to Bill Owensby next. I mean, it sounds like with a flatline budget and demand growing, it creates some stress. Where are the areas that police officers feel it the most right now?
Well, it isn't as much in discretionary spending as it is in manpower. We don't consider that discretionary. As I alluded to earlier, our staffing levels are woefully low. And I don't dispute anything that Ryan says about the budget, about revenues. We are, without question, understaffed. We're going to continue to be understaffed. There is no light at the end of the tunnel in terms of recruiting classes, hiring new officers. I don't see any of that in the near future. At the same time, we're going to be facing 20, 30, 40 retirements a year average. So we're going to be reduced even more. So as I said, you know, we're going to be doing less with less as a fact. And there's going to reach a point where we're going to be looking at the taxpayer who is funding these things and saying, yes, we know crime's going up. We don't have the staff. You tell us how much crime is good for you.
Is acceptable.
How much crime is acceptable for you, because then add 5 years. Mm-hmm. Because once you decide you're fed up with the crime rate or the crime limits, then you've got to bring it upon your city to fix that. And in fixing that, it's going to take time.
We are talking about the challenges confronting public safety in Indianapolis here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Ryan Vaughn, Chief of Staff for Mayor Greg Ballard, the Reverend Charles Ellis, Executive Director of the 10-Point Coalition, Bill Owensby, who is president of the Indianapolis FOP Lodge number 86. I'm John Krall. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, executive editor of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We're talking about the changes ahead for Indianapolis public safety with my guests, Ryan Vaughn, who is chief of staff for Mayor Greg Ballard, the Reverend Charles Ellis, who is executive director of the 10-Point Coalition, and Bill Owensby, who is president of Indianapolis FOP Lodge number 86. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org, or you can send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. We've gotten an email question that says, I was disappointed. This is from Amy, listener named Ann, I'm sorry. I was disappointed that Mr. Straub was forced to leave Indianapolis. I felt like he had the potential to make some desperately needed changes to a police force that has some great police officers, but also has some real bad guys who are fiercely protected by the FOP. While I am a strong supporter of unions, this particular union is corrupt. I apologize for the word choice. I do not intend to imply financial misfeasance, although I don't mean to defend the FOP against it. I just don't know that it exists. I also don't know a better word. Obviously, that's someone who sees the FOP as an obstacle to progress here. How do you respond, Bill Owensby?
Well, I think that's one of the things, and I won't put words in their mouth, but I think that's one of the things the 10-Point Coalition found out about the FOP is that we weren't obstructionists. We would actually embrace change. We embrace the reforms. The department has taken several huge strides in the right direction in terms of reformation and forward thinking.
Such as?
Well, for instance, the way complaints against officers are investigated. That was really cutting edge. We have now a special investigations unit, which they're by design investigates criminal charges or criminal allegations against police officers internally. And then we have the traditional internal affairs, which investigates administrative allegations against police officers. And the special investigations unit actually clears more officers of criminal allegations than charges them. But there are those occasions when they're charged. And the important thing for Ann to look at is how a department or how a city responds to those allegations when there's reasons to charge someone criminally, a police officer or a firefighter criminally. If you're not going to have an the facts of the matter is you're not going to have an organization where there aren't, especially this size, where there aren't allegations and there aren't criminal acts, there aren't bad people doing bad things, stupid things. Mm-hmm. The important thing to look at is what happens when those allegations ring true, or there's enough to charge someone. The city, the prosecutor's office, the internal affairs, the special investigations unit, they act swiftly and surely and deal with that. So we don't defend any officer that's charged criminally unless it meets certain guidelines, and it's basically the scope of employment. If an officer is on duty committing a crime that's a felony, we don't defend them. We don't. So, and I think that's just a common misconception about the FOP. We don't defend these officers that charged with bribery or something like that. We don't defend them. So I think that's just a common misconception of the FOP.
We are talking about public safety here in Indianapolis. You can call 1-866-476-3881 to join the conversation. Part of this, I guess where I'd like to go with this, is that when we've dealt with this subject before on this show and had guests in here, they always identify that one of the big challenges confronting law enforcement in this city gets to Ann's question. I've got another one, email question here, that that really speaks to the question of trust. How big a challenge is that, Ryan Vaughn? Actually, and frankly, when Mayor Ballard was in here in the studio on the show, he spoke about that as one of the primary challenges confronting his administration and law enforcement officials. How big a challenge is that right now?
Yeah. Trust is an important part of that relationship. And I want to say this to the email question too. Bill and I, Bill is a friend of mine. Rick, who he works with, is also a friend of mine. But all three of us would tell you that our professional relationship has been strained. There has been some movement driven mostly through community voices and some internal voices for reform and change. And the way we do, and a lot of it, frankly, is budget-driven as well, that we keep kind of circling back to. And the way that we reform is such a tough word, modernize our police department to deal with the situations we have. And so trust is important. I think we have a relationship, an improving relationship, I would say. I would hope Bill and Rick would say the same thing, the FOP. We're communicating frequently. Now that I'm the chief of staff, not that the last one didn't, I had a relationship with these guys before I came in as the council. I've tried to maintain that and open it up on the 25th floor. It's incrementally getting better, but there's still, frankly, some areas professionally where we just disagree. I mean, we talked about the area of investigation of officers. I agree. The FOP and internally the police department developed a good standard of doing that. But what they don't like, and what some officers don't like, is that the head of that division is a civilian employee, not a member of the police department. We feel like that's important to provide some credibility to those processes, so it's outside of the department. They feel like it's a sort of a breach, I think, of the way that they interact and through their chain of command. And so there are still these rubbing points that we're working on, but it's been strained for sure.
Well, and it sounds like, from what I'm hearing, given all the imperatives, that the next public safety director is going to have some first-rate political skills, keeping everybody working together. Is that a fair assessment?
Oh, certainly. I laughed when the job description for public safety director that we published nationally was 2.5 pages long, detailing as much as we could, and the article in the media talked about one word of that 2.5 page description, and that was, this person must have tact.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that touches on what all of us appreciate, which is there is still some trust and relationship building that needs to get done here in order for us to work as a cohesive unit.
We are talking about public safety here in Indianapolis. You can join the conversation by calling us at 1-866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org or send a comment or question via Facebook or Twitter at WFYI. Roy, welcome to the program.
Thank you for taking my call.
Certainly.
The issue of the budget and cutting expenses makes a lot of sense, but I often feel like the police department doesn't always do their part in give and take. Everybody else in this economy is hurting really bad, and yet we can't get past issues like take-home cars and things like that where money could be saved. And if putting more officers on the street, it seems like there ought to be some ways to make some sacrifices so you can accomplish that goal.
Well, I'll let Bill Owensby take that one first.
You know, that's a common complaint of the take-home cars. I think budgetarily, that is something that could ease the budget if you did something with the take-home cars. What people don't realize is there's 1,600, or shy of 1,600 now, but 1,600 officers, and many of those drive marked cars on and off duty. It's a force multiplier, and a bad guy who's thinking about robbing a bank or robbing a store is going to see those marked cars driving down the street. And one of the things I like to ask people when they bring this up is, did you see a police car on the street today? Well, the answer is going to be yes. Did you know if that police officer was on or off duty? No. Mm-hmm. Neither does the bad guy. So it's a crime reduction tool, and it is quite frankly a tool that our officers are required to maintain. They're required to have because of you know, in the post 9/11 world, we have many pieces of equipment that we have to have it with us every single day. It's interesting when you listen to the Aurora shootings, the Aurora shooting tape. Obviously, that bad guy introduced some sort of a chemical agent to the theater prior to starting a shooting rampage. The officers get there and are screaming for gas masks. They have to wait for the fire department to show up to give them gas masks and go in. Some of them went in without it, but all of our officers have that kind of equipment with them. So if you take away take-home cars, then there's issues of that essential equipment. Yes, we get that fuel costs. We get we approved a fuel surcharge 2 years ago to help ease up on the fuel budget. We then again approved it last year. So we are trying to do our part. We've introduced a 10-step plan in April that encompassed many different facets of budgetary savings. And a lot of people are going to have skin in the game for that to go through. And we're still talking about it. In fact, we're talking about it as we speak, how to best find some savings in the budget, because it is pretty much stripped bare. So it's going to have to do with equipment, personnel, salaries, that kind of thing. We're talking about all those things.
Ryan Vaughn, I'm going to let you take a crack at this too. Is the caller's point a valid one, that some of these perks could go? Has there been an intransigence on the part of police officers in terms of reducing expenses?
Yes. I mean, there is. We have one of the most liberal take-home car policies in the country. Mm-hmm. But, in fairness, and to Bill's point, the FOP is not denying that. They're working with us to find solutions to make savings that do what we all think is important, which is maximize police presence in the community, but recognize that budget constraints are such that, perhaps driving it all day, off duty is not appropriate, or maybe it needs to be parked, or maybe we could pool cars, there's all kinds of, I hesitate to sort of list these possibilities out there because they become sort of rumors, but the truth of the matter is we are and have been, will continue to, I hope, meet and work together to find a solution that is hopefully amicable to both sides. So
we've gotten a question from a listener who did not want to go on the air, actually asked about, in terms of searching for the new public safety director, whether there's a sensitivity to the city's growing Latino population was going to be part of the mix. And then the second part of his question is, and are we working now to modernize the police force in a way that we're gathering intelligence from Latino community and or gangs, being able to translate, for example? I'll start with you, Ryan Vaughn, on that one.
Sure. First and foremost, we have a representative from the Latino community, Mr. Gonzalez from Lavos, on the search committee. So we literally put someone from the community, a community leader, on there to be cognizant of these type of issues. Secondly, I think Director Straub has been very forthright in both the training curriculum and in continuing education and his communication with the public that we are a very diverse community. We are beyond white and black. We are white and black and Burmese and Chinese and Hispanic and Native American and, fill in the blank. We are a growing, diverse city, and it is essential that we be able to communicate with the folks from different cultures, different languages, different belief systems in order to properly police.
We've gotten a question from a listener named David, and it speaks to something that Ryan Vaughn was addressing earlier, saying that public safety and the public safety director, we focus most of the time, obviously, on law enforcement and police here. This listener says, I would be interested in hearing a discussion of diminished fire protection on the northeast side of town. Since merging with IFD, the north side has lost hazardous materials protection, automobile extrication abilities, and fire apparatus. Clearly, whoever did this has not worked in radio. You try to avoid those multisyllabic words for cold readings. The number of firefighters at Station 21 has gone from 10 firefighters available to respond from that station at the time of merger and is now down to 4 firefighters, including the loss of a ladder truck. Should we be looking at this? You made the point earlier that, Ryan Vaughn, that we should be looking at this in a more holistic sense in terms of the community. Are the police the place that where the pinch is being felt the worst, or are there other areas?
Yeah, you know, those comments are a little misleading. They show up as a problem, and actually they're representative of progress. Because what we've been doing in this community is taking 9 different fire departments and consolidating them piecemeal in such a way that we can provide consistent service throughout the county. And so when we do that, for example, we take, you know, 2 fire departments or 3 fire departments. Once we're Marion County IFD, one we're Lawrence, or one we're Washington Township, or we're Warren. And where these firehouses may have been literally blocks apart from one another serving different districts, we now eliminate 2 firehouses, build one, save operating costs, save on manpower, provide the exact same level, if not better, service. And so there are always, when you go through these changes, some folks who are opposed to those kind of changes because they get to know the guys in the firehouse, or the guys in the firehouse don't want to leave. I mean, there's all kinds of reasons that these kind of things percolate to the top. But the fact of the matter is, this is exactly what I was talking about when I say we need to operate more strategically with the resources we have. That consolidation effort up there, that relocation of the fire truck, was a direct effort or direct result of a consolidation effort, which is saving taxpayers money and providing the same level of service.
We've got just about a minute left, so I'm going to ask real quickly to go around the horn. I'll start with the Reverend Charles Ellis on this. What should the first thing that the next public safety director in Indianapolis do? What should that person's first act be? Reverend Ellis.
I think its first act is going to be to get at the table with the entire team and holistically try to come and see and see where we are and try to get a feel and a sense for where we are and where we need to go. Look at what we've been doing that's good to keep to go forward, as well as look at some of the things that maybe that we're not doing, especially the budget issues, to see what steps need to be taken to go forward.
Bill Owensby in about 10 seconds.
Well, I'm hoping he's a magician because he's going to have to figure out ways to get around all these issues that we've just discussed.
Okay. And Ryan Vaughn, you've got about 10 seconds as well.
The key to his or her success will be listen, learn, and then lead in that order.
I'd like to thank all of you for joining me. I think this has been an illuminating conversation. Ryan Vaughn, thank you for joining us. Reverend Charles Ellis, thank you for being here. Bill Owensby of Indianapolis FOP Lodge number 86. Thank you for joining us. You've been listening to No Limits. I am John Kroll. Have a great week.
No Limits is a production of WFYI Public Radio, 90.1 FM and HD1. Producer, Sharon Alseth. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Jeanette Rhodes. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each Thursday at 1 p.m. for No Limits, rebroadcast at 8 p.m., and you can listen online at WFYI.org.